You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are here for the very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. I hope you get hooked. I hope you become an addict of the Kevin Smith Show. Lots of folks have that habit, and it's a good habit to get into. Even if you get hooked, you don't have to worry about anybody doing an intervention because it's just a good thing. If you are new, you need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. It's an electronic version. It's not on paper, okay? We don't use old tech. We use high tech, new tech, and we send it to you in your email. And comes out each and every week. As a matter of fact, this week's edition will be coming out. Some of you will get it tonight. Some of you will get it tomorrow. You've got time right now during the show to subscribe. So go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe. You'll see it. It is. You'll see a little button that has red letters, and it says K-Files E-Zine. That's it. Just click there and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There's no strings attached. I think probably everyone who's paying any attention to the news is pretty much focused on the thing with the economy. And that is important. It's important news. It's big news. It's momentous news. But it's not the only news that's happening. There is another hurricane brewing out in the Atlantic, and I've been getting emails from a guy that sends me emails about weather warfare quite a lot and kind of keeps me updated on that. I don't think he's saying that this one is a product of weather warfare yet, but he's saying there's some strange things about it that that he's watching. But anyway, whether it is or isn't, there is this hurricane brewing in the Atlantic, and it could, in fact, do damage to our East Coast. Now, that's just what we need after we've had all this damage with Ike, not only on our coast, but as it traveled up across the United States, it did a lot of damage. And now here's one that could hit our East Coast. And we've got this economic debacle and lots of other things swirling around the world that are costing us heavily. What do you think? We're not going to be discussing that tonight, but I'll tell you what I think. I think that we're watching the old paradigm die. I think we're watching the death throes of an old paradigm. Something different, something new is emerging. That's what I think. I could be wrong about that, but that is what I think. That's not new news to you if you've been listening to this show for very long. You've heard me say that before. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. He is going to join us from Peru, and if our technology continues to work as it's working right at this moment, you're even going to get the privilege of watching Jerry as we do the show, because we have a video link with him in Lima, Peru. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Jerry Wills. Jerry Wills, as many of you know, because you've listened to this show for a while, and you've heard Jerry several times on the show. But Jerry Wills he's a spiritual healer. He is an explorer, and he is the owner of ExpeditionsTV.com. And he's a lot of other things. Jerry's a very talented, very highly skilled individual and very knowledgeable about a lot of things. But Jerry has just completed conducting a tour, of some of the expedition sites, some of the places he's been on previous expeditions. He took a group of people with him. He's just completed that. And is still in South America. He is in Lima, Peru, and he joins us from Lima, Peru this evening. Hopefully, our video link with him is going to work as it should. We tested it earlier today. Let's see if it does. And there he is. Jerry, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is another first for us. This is the first time that I have established a video link with someone across the world to do the show, and I appreciate you so much for helping us do that, because I didn't know how to do it, and Jerry fixed that for us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. We have a lot of broadcast equipment down here with us, as we're continuing to film different segments for Expeditions TV. Both Kathy and I have our own package of these things. So it's just a simple matter of rigging up a few computers, a few cameras, and we're on the air.
Yes, indeed, we are. Now, I don't know. I think you told me that your camera doesn't have nighttime. It's not very good for nighttime capabilities. But maybe at some point you could maybe we could just kind of test that and let people see what Lima, Peru looks like at nighttime. But maybe not. You decide. Jerry, tell us a little bit. I'm sorry? Okay. Well, and you also need to know, folks, that this is not just a regular telephone link. This is a computer and telephone link. It's a Skype link, and so there can be some delays, so we'll work with that. Now, Jerry, tell us a little bit about what you've been doing there in Peru.
Well, the last month we've traveled from La Paz, Bolivia, visiting Tiwanaku and Lake Titicaca and several other areas in that region, and we've also taken our time coming back. Going north, we stopped in Cusco and Machu Picchu. We had a week. We were in the Amazon jungle. We've just been all over the place. Less than a week ago, we were on the eastern slope of the Andes looking for something in the San Martin region. So we've just been on the go quite a bit. It's been a little exhausting.
All right. Now you took a you took a group of people with you to Peru and or to South America, and you took them to various sites. Kind of tell us a little bit about that tour. What was that all about?
Well, the beginning of the tour started in La Paz, Bolivia, and that was problematic because La Paz is not very friendly with the United States. The first element we had to overcome, they wanted us to have mandatory inoculations against yellow fever, which is like if you went to the North Pole and you were afraid of getting malaria. There's no yellow fever in La Paz. It's only when you go into the jungle regions you might encounter that. We worked our way around that, and then we also had to pay $135. It was supposed to be just $100, but it turned out to be $135 for a visa just to enter the country. And once we were in the country, there's a lot of tension, and I'm sure many of your listeners are aware that there's a state of siege going on right now in Bolivia. So we ended up staying there for about 4 days, maybe five, and then we made our way back to Peru.
Okay, now what was the purpose, what was the reason that you were in Bolivia? What were you there to see?
We went there specifically for two reasons. Number one, there's a gigantic statue that was excavated out of Tiwanaku, and there are not really any video clips of this, and you don't really find many pictures that are very good of this particular statue. And the statue is covered with all of these hieroglyphs. Now, there are several statues there, actually, and they're all covered with these hieroglyphs. The main thrust of going into Bolivia was primarily so we could get this kind of video and get these pictures, because we wanted to analyze these hieroglyphs. We believe the hieroglyphs have something to do with with astrophysical events. For example, our journey around the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, and all the details that are involved with that. There's also information we wanted to glean from these glyphs about the moon, placements of stars, and so forth. What we discovered is that basically Tiwanaku is aligned, and I'm trying to remember, because I have my notes directly in front of me, but it seems like Tiwanaku is aligned at 49 degrees, which basically means that if you were to cycle backwards in time and take a look at where Tiwanaku was back in time when it would have been in alignment, being at 49 degrees, you would go back in time about 28,000 years when it was in alignment last time. It's about to go back into alignment again, and that alignment is going to take place on 2012. We found that to be fascinating, and we also discovered while we were there, through the help of our guide, who is an archaeological assistant, he started pointing out some things that some of them know about, but you don't really read about or hear about anyplace. These are things that the archaeologists discovered, and they don't discuss it. And, of course, they've hired these fellows from Bolivia as their assistants who've gone to college and are just a few credits shy of becoming an archaeologist themselves. And what they told us, or actually what they showed us, is a series of stone pillars, and in alignment with some of the statues, keeping in mind some of these statues were removed and replaced and no one knows where they belong, but the stone pillars that make up the walls have never been removed. They've only been excavated. And from this, they were able to calculate, using stars, the 28,000-year cycle that Tiwanaku suggests. Whoever built this place, and it's an amazing place, did so before 27 or 28,000 years ago. They knew that this event was taking place, this crossing of the galactic center, and they built this place because of that. There are a lot of things there that aren't uncovered yet, and excavations are going on. There are just a number of very unique and mysterious things about Tiwanaku, and we were there to try and pull some of this information videotape it and present it to our viewers at expeditionstv.com.
Now, Jerry, you were talking about presenting this to your viewers at expeditionstv.com. You've actually done some live broadcasts from there, have you not?
Yeah, we broadcast live from the jungle. We tried to broadcast five times. We were successful once. The satellite dish, it's pretty good. It works well. Our friend Peter Schneider owns the lodge, and he's made sure that it has the best of everything. But the other four times we attempted to broadcast, there were storm clouds and, you know, heavy rain, and that really knocks out a satellite, you know, that isn't huge and powerful. And the one at the lodge definitely isn't huge and powerful. But yeah, we have tried to broadcast remotely from some of these places because we feel that the people who are interested in what we're doing and what these places represent would benefit from seeing it as close to firsthand as possible through our cameras. And when that isn't practical, then we just videotape it and edit it down and put it up on expeditionstv.com.
Jerry, one of the really cool things about what you're doing, even though it only worked one time, one of the really cool things, in my estimation, about what you're doing is trying to get this video of your expedition and your finds out to the public as it happens. Now, okay, you tried five times, it worked once. But that's once. I don't know anyone else that's doing that. I don't know anyone else that's even attempting to give us a live view of the expedition. And I really think that's cool. And even if it only worked once, are you going to try it again?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're definitely going to try it again. I would do it from here if there's anything really interesting to see. But, you know, we're in Lima. And Lima is not really that interesting. It's a big, big city, really noisy, really dirty. There's not that much interesting to see that you're allowed to videotape. If you go to the Gold Museum or, you know, places like this, yeah, there's some interesting things there, but there's no way to transmit from there. So that takes us back to just presenting it online after the fact. We are going to try and get to a remote location a few hours from here out in the desert, and we're going to try to broadcast from there. I don't know how successful we'll be, but we're going to try. I remember one night when we were in the jungle and we were trying to broadcast. We had lights set up, and we were up in the top of the tower, a 50-foot-tall lookout tower. We were just being eat up by mosquitoes and all kinds of bugs that were flying around and jumping on us. And finally, you know, it was pointless to try and do anything else because it got dark and then storm clouds moved in. But yeah, we're going to try to broadcast again. There's a, I don't know how old it is. I'm guessing this thing is at least 100 million years old. It is called a megalodon. It's a giant shark, and it is big enough to eat a whale, bite it in half. The head of this thing is about 25 to 30 foot across. Our son, Bryce, who's sitting over here, knows where this is, and we're trying to get a four-wheel drive so we can go out and at least shoot video of it, and maybe, if we're lucky, we can do a live broadcast from there as well.
Jerry, how do you even do a live broadcast from the jungle? I mean, do you have, like, some type of portable satellite dish, or how do you do that?
No, we basically just tap into whatever signal is available, and once we've tapped into it, we start broadcasting, if it's a good enough signal.
Mm-hmm. All right. So,
sorry, you from the jungle? You were asking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, in the jungle. How do you do that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that is done with a satellite dish.
So you have a portable, I would assume a small satellite dish that you carry with you out into the jungle.
No, no. This is a permanently fixed dish. It's not ours. It belongs to the lodge, the Amazon Rainforest Lodge.
All right. Now, this you called it a megalodon that you're going to try and get some videotape of, right?
Yeah, it is a megalodon. I haven't seen it, so I don't know how big it is. But my son Bryce is right here. He can tell you.
All right.
Here's Bryce. Hey, man.
Hi, Bryce.
Somewhere between hey, how's it going?
Outstanding.
Somewhere between the Peruvian and Chile border, there's a big, strong stretch of desert that basically has many types of skeletons and types of remains from 65 million years plus. In between Peru and Chile, there's a big stretch of desert, and that's where you'd be able to find these types of skeletons and such. Megalodons are very huge. Their skeletal head, is, of course, can be anywhere between 25 feet long and of course, about 14 feet wide, even wider, much wider. I mean, we're talking huge. So I think it'd be nice to be able to film it and broadcast live and have it up for you.
Outstanding. Well, I tell you, the size of the head on that thing is bigger than my studio.
Yeah, exactly. It is just astonishing. You find on eBay and other places people who have teeth. These teeth are sold anywhere from $50 to $850, but they're about this big. In other words, 2-3 inches. The teeth on this one, I'm told, are 8 to 10 inches. So they're quite a bit larger than anything that we've seen.
I never saw anything with an 8 to 10 inch tooth, and I never saw anything with a 25-foot head. I mean, that's awesome. Awesome. And this is a prehistoric shark, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, I hope you're successful with that. Now, in conducting your tour group, you took them to a place that you told us about here on the air. And I have tried many times to say the name of it, but I can't. It's the Doorway. You told us about it, and it's like a dimensional portal. You took your group there. Where is that located from? Tell us from where you are right now, what direction is it and how many miles? And then also describe for us what happened when you got there.
Sure. Well, I'm not sure how far it is from here. I'm guessing it's around 600 miles or so. It's due south. It's near the border between Peru and Bolivia. I'm guessing it's within 50 miles of that. It's about 45 minutes south of Puno, according to Kathy. Anyway, as you said, yeah, it's a dimensional doorway. It's a doorway that, once activated, allows you passage from this world as a physical location to another world as a physical location. In many respects, as odd as it might sound, it's very much like the show Stargate. And that's why I've called it the Stargate, because it's kind of like that. You go from here to there. I activated it, and I mentioned this on a previous show. I activated this back in 1998. It was a bit by accident. I really wasn't expecting anything to happen. Since then, I've kept these three tones to myself, trying to figure out what to do with this information. On this particular trip, I decided that I would give these three tones to whomever wanted to try it at the doorway. Did you receive the video clip that I sent you?
Yes, I did. And I'll tell you what, we have a break coming up here in about a minute. Well, less than a minute, about a few seconds. And what I'd like to do is when we come back from this break, go ahead and describe for us all about the Stargate, and then we'll play that video. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are away for break, and we'll be back more with Jerry Wills and some video from that Stargate. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith Show. I am the Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is Jerry Wills. He's joining us from Lima, Peru, and so far our video link with him and audio have been much better than I expected. We ran some tests this morning. Some of you may have seen that. You didn't hear any of it, but you saw it. Didn't work real well this morning, but it seems to be working well this evening, and that's what matters. That's a good thing. All right, Jerry, tell us just briefly what happened when you took this group to this Stargate. And if you will, tell us the name of it. It's the doorway at Amaru or something like that. How do you say that?
Amaru, A-M-A-R-U, Amaru, M-U, anyway, I'm not even sure, it's Quechua.
All right. What happened when you took your group there?
Well, when we, of course, we arrived while it was still daylight, so we had a little bit of time to look around and survey the area. Of course, I've been there a lot of times. These folks hadn't been there at all. We waited until it was dark, and then once it got dark, I gave the instructions to the folks who were there. There were four or five guys, and one. They went up to the doorway, and they used these tones, and they each had all of those that went. They were able to get the tones just right. They had quite a unique experience. For us, who were standing back watching, we were starting to glow. They would shimmer, vanish for a short time. Of the two that were gone the most time, which wasn't a long time for us, we're talking probably in the order of a minute or so, but for them, they seem to have been gone a little bit longer than that. They came back with some pretty interesting stories. The clip that I sent you is one of the individuals who managed to activate the doorway. I don't think he managed to get through it. And the other individual actually went through and had an experience and came back. Keep in mind, even though it may have only been about a minute for us, for them, this experience lasted for an extended period of time. Because when you pass through the doorway, you enter into another time frame, let's say, where time is much different. When they came back once after they left. If any of your viewers have had the opportunity to watch Communion with Jodie Foster, you might understand what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, it's Contact, not Communion, with Jodie Foster. Anyway, what seemed to take place in an instant here, you leave, you go somewhere else, you go through this lengthy amount of time, and you come back just moments after you left. That's what the second individual experienced in the video clip that I sent you.
All right, let's go to that video clip and take a look and see what it is that you're talking about. I've seen it. It's pretty interesting stuff, folks. Hang on, and we'll share that with you now. All right, here we go. Well, for some reason, we're not getting audio. I have no idea why we're not getting audio out there.
I was floating over these places, and I looked down, and I felt so much love, so much light, and so much peace. Mountains took me and carried me to this place, and I felt so good. I felt so much in love and harmony with the mountains and with the land and with the forest. I still see this picture in me, and it was just floating above around. Yeah. That's what happened.
You were glowing when you come out.
Oh, yeah. Glowing red.
I thought it was white.
How long do you think you were in there? How long did it
feel? I don't know. But I went through several times, and then I went through the mountains. It was open, it was beautiful. Beautiful.
All right. There you have it. That is the that's one of the group members that was with Jerry. His accent sounded like he's from Sweden.
He's German.
He's German. Okay. And those of you who were standing there watching him as he went through this doorway, I heard someone say he was glowing red, and heard someone say he was glowing white.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the glow that we would see around people. Sometimes there would be little twinkly sparkles of light that would emit all over the face of this doorway. And at other times, you would just see the individual glowing. And I think it's from one perspective to another. You may see red, and it goes to white, and shifts kind of a greenish blue, and then back to white again. It just seems to shift, or depending on when you might blow, will determine exactly what kind of thing.
So, now, did he disappear?
The person that...
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was wondering...
The person that you heard speaking in that...
Well, your audio is breaking up. The question that I had is, did he feel that he physically left the group and went through this door to another place?
Yes, he physically felt that he left, and from our perspective, he was no longer there for at least 45 seconds to a minute.
So he disappeared from your sight. Yeah, I think we've begun to experience some audio problems, and that did happen to us earlier whenever we were testing this. Let me do this. I'm going to show the folks a picture of this gateway, and this is from a video that Jerry sent to us previously. This is the gateway. You can see actually Jerry is standing in the in the gateway there. You can barely see that, but let me advance it some. But this is a video that Jerry sent us previously, and you can see the gateway behind him. It is carved into that rock back there. And that is where the group was. Jerry, I don't know if we have reestablished our audio link, but let's give it a try. I just showed people parts of the video that you sent me previously from that doorway. How many people did you take there?
Six of them.
Okay, so there were six in the group. Did all six attempt to go through the doorway?
Yes, all six made the attempt.
How many were successful?
As I remember, without reviewing my notes, I believe it was two, maybe three. Everyone was successful at having an experience, but I believe it was all, maybe three, who were successful in actually going through and coming back. And a reason is because, number one, we're at 13,000 feet. And one of the things that we noticed this time that we hadn't noticed before is that when we were there in the doorway making these turns, it seemed as though the air was just gone. We were having a hard even.
Now, does it seem that way just for the person that is trying to activate the doorway, or does it seem that way for everyone who is there at the same time?
No, it seemed like that for the person who was in the doorway. But for the rest of us, we were having no problems at all. But as soon as we got in the doorway, knelt down, and got into making the turns, it was very hard to get enough air to actually make the low tones that are necessary in order to turn this thing off. One of the things I thought was quite interesting, after I initially went up and tried triggering the door to see what would happen, if anyone else did anything, there were about every 30 seconds of energy that came sweeping out towards us.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I do not know what has happened here, but I do know how to stop it. Yeah, there we go. The video and the audio were beginning to get a little bit touchy there, and all of a sudden we just lost audio. I actually still have a video link with Jerry, but I don't have audio. So anyway, perhaps he will call us back. I hope he will. He is establishing the link from his location rather than us establishing the link from here. That was necessary because of technical considerations at his end of the equation. But we'll see if we have him back with us. Let me reach for this control. And all right, Jerry, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. I think I walked in front of the antenna here.
Okay, I don't know what happened. You just suddenly disconnected on the audio. But that's okay. We're back, and that's a good thing. And we have a break coming up here in 30 seconds. When we come back from this break, I'd like for you to sort of, if you will, explain for our new listeners about this doorway. You know, it may sound like so much mystical woo-woo stuff unless we explain the ancient origins of this doorway and how you came to know about it. So I want you to do that, and then we'll go from there into what's coming up next. All right, folks, we are into the break. We shall return right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. During the break, we lost Jerry's video feed, and then we lost his audio. So he's actually going to call us on a landline, and we'll continue our conversation with him in just a moment when he's able to get back in touch with us. Now, look, this is pretty exciting stuff. I mean, for a lot of reasons. You got to understand that, yes, it's a radio show, but you got to also understand that it is the first time, you know, we have a video feed on my website, and so it's the first time that we've been able to do a video link with someone far away and have them on the show with us. His video feed is back up. I can see him well. But we're still waiting on the telephone to ring, and I hope that he's able to get through to us. Jerry Wills is one of the most unusual individuals that I've ever met. Now, I know him personally, and I've met him personally, and he and his wife, and I'm very honest with you when I tell you this is just one of the most unique, unusual individuals that I've ever met. He's very, very knowledgeable about a lot of things and a wide range of topics, and he is an explorer extraordinaire. He takes off into the jungles of South America and goes and looks for these very strange locations. He looks, you know, there are rumors among the natives that there's this or there's that. Well, he goes to look, and he has found a lot of them. If we are able to get him back online with us, get his audio back online, I'm watching his video. He's on the telephone now attempting to call us. But if we're able to reestablish the audio link with him, I want him to tell you about this portal, this gateway, this Stargate. And we did a whole show on this one time, but I hope he can just, you know, sort of give you a encapsulated view or description of what this thing is. All right, he's coming back online now. Let's see. Jerry, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right, that's a much better audio feed, too. All right, let me position some things here, and we've got your video up as well. We can see you on the telephone, and let's get you back up on screen. Jerry, could you sort of describe for our new listeners who didn't hear the previous show, what's the story of this gateway, and how did you come to know about it? Okay, we don't have audio for some reason. Are you able to hear me, Jerry?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Yeah, if you will, tell our new listeners about this gateway. What's the story behind it? What's the folklore? And then how did you come to discover it? Okay, I guess Jerry cannot hear me. Let me try this. Jerry, are you able to hear us? He's not hearing us. All right. Well, I don't know what the problem is, but are you able to hear me, Jerry? All right. Will you tell our new listeners the folklore, the story behind this gateway, and how did you discover it?
All right, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. I wasn't the one who
No, your audio just blinked out. We're not hearing a thing from you. Well, I don't know, folks. I have no idea what is the difficulty. He's on the phone, but he apparently cannot hear me, and we certainly cannot hear him. I don't know what's the problem. But, Jerry, if you will, try to reestablish contact with us by telephone. For some reason, we're not hearing you.
All right.
I don't know what's the deal. We heard that. But anyway, this gateway does not look like what you see when you watch Stargate. This gateway is not a piece of machinery, or at least it doesn't look like it. It's something that's rather... Well, you saw pictures of it. I showed you pictures of it. And it... you know, it looks like a big stone, a big outcropping of stone, and then there's a like a doorway cut into it, but it only goes, it's just recessed back in there just a little bit. And then there's a place, according to Jerry, there's a place for people who are going to activate this gateway to place their forehead, and then there are there's a series of three tones that they... make, that they intone, and it activates the gateway. All right, Jerry, we're going to give it another try here. We'll see. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just...
Yeah, nah, this isn't going to work. I think you need to call us on Skype again because you're cutting out really, really bad. Yeah. Give us a call on Skype again. We'll try that. All right. I apologize, folks. That's the way technology goes, and it's a live show. But if we can get him back up on the Skype line, we'll get him back for you, and perhaps we'll be able to hear what's going on. All right. There is the call coming in, and we should have you now, Jerry. Can you hear me? I hate this, man. I hate this. Okay. Well, you're a little bit broken up, but it's better than that landline. All right. Let's give this a try. See if you can tell us the folklore behind the gate.
Indians, I'm sorry, the Amari, and they call it that because they think it's a doorway to hell. There are several instances where people have gone and sat in the dirt, leaned against it, and just vanished. And other cases where they have been walking at night, village, they'll see a glow, then they'll see some strange person who is walking through the doorway, and of course they are never very good because it scares them too much. They take a
well. I'll tell you what, folks. I have to apologize to you, but again, that's just the way the technology goes. We've lost Jerry's audio entirely again. But I'll tell you what, let's do, Jerry. Well, we've got you back. Jerry, what we may need to do is just disconnect from the video feed and just go with the audio. That may be what we have to do. But it's worked well up till now. All right.
All right.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just disconnect the video feed, and then we'll maybe it'll the audio feed will work better. So bear with us, folks. We'll try to get through this. But I'm determined we're going to, because I tell you, it's worth hearing. And this is the first time we've ever tried something like this. Pretty exciting, pretty neat. I'm sitting in Phoenix, Arizona. Jerry is sitting in Lima, Peru. And we've had an opportunity to see him this evening. Jerry, are you with me on the audio?
So far, so good. How's it, Kevin?
All right. Well, pretty good. Pretty good. All right. Let's give it a whirl here. So people were terrified. The local people are terrified of this thing because they've seen people come and go through the gate. And they have seen some of their people lean up against it and just vanish through it, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And, of course, that gave way to all kinds of rumors and mythological meanings. They're very superstitious people.
All right. Now, how did you find it? Well, we're into a break. All right, I think we've got the audio kind of worked out. And we'll get to that when we come back. But I want you to tell people how you found it, how you found out how to activate it, and we'll do that after the break. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. I think we've got our technical difficulties worked out. I certainly hope so. And we no longer have Jerry's video feed. We weren't able to keep that, but we do have his audio feed. All right, Jerry, we kind of mangled all of that about the folklore because of the technical problems. Let's give it another go. What is it that people are afraid of there? And how did you find this gate?
Well, they're afraid of the gate because people have disappeared into it and never been seen again. And as how I was shown the vision by a fellow about 15 years ago, he wanted to show me something that was really unusual because asking to try and find that. And he took me to see this, and it was definitely very unusual. About 1996, I met an old fellow. He was an Aymarian from Lake Titicaca. And a shaman. A lot of folks would say they're shamans. This fellow actually was pretty interesting and quite talented. And he decided he was going to tell me after we became friends. We spent, you know, several weeks together, so he decided he was going to tell me the way the doorway works when I was asked about it. He gave me three different rooms. And he said, I used these three tones at the gateway that it would activate it and you could move through it. I didn't really put a lot of stock in this, but I did go back to the doorway with my wife, Kathy, and a few other people and used the tones, and it did do something quite remarkable. And of course, you know, I'm sure there is another story on it. Just briefly, I glowed for a few moments and then just completely vanished for a while. I was gone, according to Kathy, I was gone for about a minute, maybe 2 minutes. And then I met you again.
But now to you, it seemed that to you it seemed that you had been gone for a much longer period of time, right?
Yes, it seemed like I'd been gone. I really couldn't determine how long I had been gone. I just didn't have a preference. It seemed like it had been way too long.
Okay, now, where do you go from here? We're going to open up the telephone lines here in just a moment and allow people to call and ask questions or make comments. But where do you go from here? I mean, I know you're going to take a look at this megalodon, What's the next expedition? What is it that you want to discover next?
Well, we were received information from a fellow that there's another doorway on top of a mountain in Ecuador, and we're trying to find some reasonably priced airline tickets so we can get to Ecuador. Right now, it's looking like about $1,500 to fly there from here in Lima for round trip tickets. But we've been told that the doorway is there, that the Quechua Indians who were living up in the mountains came down and mentioned it. They were afraid of it. So we want to go climb that mountain and videotape this doorway so everyone else has a chance to take a look at it with us.
All right. Now, you you sent me a, and we played it already this evening, but you sent me a promotional video promoting the Kevin Smith Show website. And by the way, thank you very much for that. I certainly appreciate it. But it shows you exiting a cave, and you talk to us, and then you go back into the cave. Tell us about what is that? What's that all about?
Well, that's a different kind of doorway. What that is, is an entrance way into the subterranean tunnel system that moves across South America, north and south and into the jungle and into the deserts. The tunnel system is vast, and as far as I know, it's completely unexplored. Some people know a little bit about small areas. But no one has ever videotaped one of these doorways, nor videotaped themselves going in. So I decided that it was time that everyone had a chance to see what it looks like. So I had been shown this particular doorway, again, about 13 to 14 years ago. Because, you know, I'm always poking around asking questions. So I went there to videotape this. When I got to the area, it was a restricted area. No one's allowed to go in. So I had to climb up the side of a nearby mountain and circumvent the guards and sneak into this place so I can get the video. But it's definitely an entrance way to the tunnel system. When you walk in the entrance of that cave, there are steps leading downwards. You travel about 35 feet. It curves to the left. There is an inverted V opening to the right. You move through that, and it immediately just to the left, and you follow that through a bit of a tight area into a room with a table, a big stone table. It doesn't have four legs, since, you know, just a big stone thing that's been made into a platform of sorts. And then at the end of that hallway, there's another door, and that doorway continues on into the subterranean tunnel system. Nearby the entrance to the doorway, there is a large piece of stone, and that large stone is precisely carved into the shape of the sacred mountain that's just about a day's journey from Cusco.
Now, what was the purpose of these this extensive tunnel system that I understand that there are probably thousands of miles of tunnel?
Yes, that's correct. You might remember Gold of the Gods. Who was it that wrote that? Eric Von Daniken. I think he wrote some things about this. But the tunnel systems do extend quite a distance. You can find them in Ecuador, Colombia, Chile, Bolivia, Peru. They just go from one end of the continent to the other, and they also go from the west coast, the Pacific coast, to the eastern side of the Andes. And the reason I believe that these tunnels were made is because it was a very quick and efficient way to get from point A to point B without going up and down mountains like we've done so many times in the past.
So it was sort of
getting around.
Sort of their subterranean interstate highways.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's go to the telephone. And by the way, folks, we have opened the phone lines. The telephone number is on your screen. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, it's been a long time, Kev. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks for asking.
Yes, I assume it's Jerry Wells that's on the show tonight, right?
That's correct.
How's it going, Jerry?
I'm not sure.
I'm doing good, Kev.
Oh, can you hear him, Jerry?
Yeah, I can pretty well.
Okay. Go ahead, Kevin.
I hate to say, but, I missed part of the show tonight due to internet problems. But I just want to say that, it's great to be back on the Kevin Smith Show. A lot of the guys that I pissed have been wondering where I was, and, I'm just started school for broadcasting. But Jerry Wells, I've been following a lot of the stuff that you've been doing in South America, and I'm just calling you to wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate that. Best wishes to you as well.
Yeah, we used to hear from Kevin almost every night, but since you moved away from Iroquois Falls, we haven't heard from you. I don't think you've called since then. And he's...
Nope. This is the first time. My God, it's already been 2 months since the last time I called.
Yep. It's been a while.
Actually, today makes 2 months to the day since the last time I called on the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, it's good to hear from you, man.
It's great to be back.
How's broadcasting school going?
It's going real great. I just finished my first commercial, so...
Outstanding. Well, thanks for the call, man. It's good to hear from you.
All right, have a take care, Kev, and hello, and take care to everybody in the Kevin Smith audience. And,
all right.
Great to be back on the show. And take care, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Bye. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm Matt from Florida.
Okay, what was your first name?
Matt.
Matt. Okay, Matt, speak good and loud for us right into the phone so we can hear you.
Okay. I had some internet problems when Jerry was explaining why some people could go through the Stargate and some couldn't. Could he recap that again?
Yeah, Jerry, why can some people go through the Stargate and some cannot?
Well, the reason is because they're not making the turn correctly. the guys that were there were experimenting with different tones for themselves, trying to get the tone just right. There's a very specific resonance that has to occur in order for it to trigger the Stargate to turn on. It's very specific. And in this rarefied atmosphere, a few of them just weren't able to get the tone loud enough or with the proper resonance. The resonance has to match with your body and the stone that you're poised in front of. When that resonance matches, things start happening.
All right, Matt, does that answer your question?
This is also at about 13,000 feet, so it's very thin air.
All right, Matt, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the beeping you're hearing is part of this new phone system. You have to understand that our phone system, some of you are new, you don't know this. We had a big lightning storm, and then we had some problems with the phones and with a lot of other things, even though we use surge protectors. The phone system is back up. It is running, but it's only about 80% of it functioning, and the other 20% has yet to be repaired. So that's why you're hearing that beeping. Normally, we don't hear that, all right? So the telephone line is open at 602-539-9580, and we'll wing it with 80% of the phone system functioning and the other part to be functioning soon, all right? Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Caller, you're live on the show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Your phone system's a little shaky still, but this is Brent from Wyoming.
Yep.
Jerry, I have a question for you, and I'll hang up after I ask. Did you go through, and if you did you happen to ask about whether or not there was going to be a need for people to pass through? email. Okay, bye.
All right, did you go through? And if you did you ask, is there going to be a need for people to pass through?
Is there going to be a need for people to pass through?
Yeah. I assume he's asking if there's going to be some cataclysm. Is that why they put it here, so that we can escape?
Well, I don't know if that's the reason or not. My view on that, my opinion, is that it was put in place so that the quote-unquote gods could easily move between this world and other worlds. And it was kept as a closely guarded secret how to use this because, of course, the gods didn't want anyone else to use it. If it was meant as an escape mechanism, they would have made this knowledge known to everyone, and I don't think that they wanted that to happen.
All right. I've got on the screen again, folks, what you're looking at is the actual Stargate that we're talking about. I think a lot of folks, Jerry, when we talk about this, they envision in their minds this big piece of high technology that they see on the TV show, Stargate 1 or SG-1. And that's not what we're talking about. But what you are talking about is that it has the same effect. It transports you across space and time.
Yes, exactly right.
All right, now, when you went through this, you told us about this in detail the last time you were with us. But when you went through this, Jerry, you felt like you were gone for a long time. You said that you weren't able to tell how long, but you felt like you had been gone for a long time, and you became concerned that you didn't know if you were going to be able to get back to where your wife was. She was there at the Stargate. She was there at this Stargate that we're looking at on the screen with you when you went through. When you came back, you described what it was like when you arrived back at the Stargate. But I'd like for you to describe that again, because I've got a question about that. But I want you to describe again what it was like when you arrived back.
Well, when I arrived back, I was actually inside what seemed like a cavity that was behind that that flat piece of rock that's recessed in. For me, it was transparent, and I could look through this. I could see Lake Titicaca and the mountains that were between me and hills between me and Lake Titicaca, and of course the field and the people who were out there. It was a difficult process to get myself out of that mess. I had to make the same tones again, and when I did successfully, I just fell through as though there was nothing there at all. But until I was able to do that, it just held me in place. In other words, it was like a big glass window that I couldn't go through at all.
Why? This is the question, and caller, just hang on. I'll get to you in just a second. Why do you think, we're looking at stone here. We're looking at rock. Why do you think it looked to you like glass and you could see through it?
I don't have a clue. I just, you can imagine my surprise. I wasn't expecting to be in that situation. But it certainly was trans-
calling
from that. That perspective, on the other side, it looked as though there was nothing there, except I just felt a very solid form in front of me that I couldn't pass through. But I have no idea why it looked transparent.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your previous comment was broadcast. If you will tell us your first name and where are you calling from.
Yeah, this is Trey from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to thank Mr. Fools for coming on again. And I remember last time he was on talking about the Stargate in which he put his, I believe it was head, into, and he traveled outside of our universe and was looking at a black mass And then he mentioned that the people who created our universe actually found a way to where they could actually go into it and everything. And that was an incredible, incredible story. Incredible. But let me ask you this. Do you find it, whenever you go to these remote sites, that the villages, the locals, whether they're afraid of it or not afraid of it, do they actually find it maybe impressive or seem to be happy that you're interested in it and that you actually believe them or actually, you know, you're not just someone who goes, oh, yeah, it's just a bunch of crazy old villagers making up old stories. But you're actually taking the time and spending the money to go out there and look at these sites and these tales they talk about. Do you find that they look at you differently, kind of like they're kind of impressed that you would take it seriously?
Were you able to hear that, Derek? Well, what you're hearing now is we have lost Jerry, and we also have lost our caller. Okay. Now, we'll try to get Jerry back, and ladies and gentlemen, bear with us. He is in Lima, Peru, and Jerry, are you back with me?
Yeah, I'm here. I heard most of everything that was said, and I think it died off right at the end of what he was talking about, but it was all garbled. I really couldn't make it out that clear.
Well, when you go to these remote sites, do you find that the villagers seem to appreciate the fact that you're taking it seriously, does it make any impression on them at all that you're taking it seriously?
Yeah, well, I actually videotaped some of the Aymara women, older ladies, I'm sure they must have been in their 80s, who were basically warning me to stay away from the damn thing because it was just too dangerous. They said, you don't want to do this. You don't want to get around this. We've had children just disappear. We've had men disappear. And we've seen people move out of this thing and walk across the field. It's a doorway of the devil. Stay away from this thing. And they basically tried to give me all kinds of warnings. And I videotaped this so you could see the expression on their faces when they're talking. They took it very seriously. They thought that I was pretty foolish for trying to mess with it, but they didn't want to try to stop me. They just wanted to get out of there.
All right, now we've taken a look at this. We're 2.5 minutes or so from. No, we've got a few more minutes than that till break. About 2.5 minutes now. We've taken a look at this. We've seen it. I'm going to put it back up on the screen. And so that we can see this gate. All right, there it is. And what we're looking at, it looks like it's up on a hill, and that the land falls away down toward the bottom of the picture. Where is the village in relationship to that gate?
The village is, when you're standing there looking at the gate, it would be about a mile to your left and then about a mile further back.
Okay. Do the people come around this gate at all? Do they get up around it?
During the day, they're not that afraid of it. But it's during the night that they don't think it's a very good idea. They walk around it, you know. They don't even get close to it during the day.
Okay. Do they herd animals? I mean, do they have like sheep or goats or something that they take out for grazing?
Yeah, they do, but they don't come anywhere near the gate. They keep their animals away from it.
All right. Can you tell if there's any difference in the vegetation, Jerry? We can see some looks like low, scrubby, desert-type vegetation. And we're into a break, so we're going to have to go away for that. But when we come back, I want to know if there's a difference in the vegetation near this gate as opposed to, say, 200 yards away from this gate. And we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and the telephone lines are open again. I know there are a lot of you trying to get through. We welcome your calls, and the telephone number we'll put up on the screen here in just a moment. So, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, the caller does not wish to speak. When you call in, I know what's happened, Jerry. People do this sometimes. They call in and they're listening to the show on the radio or they're listening to the show on their computer and they're waiting to hear me say, caller, you're live on the show. And the problem with that is there's about a 30-second delay. So I'm asking them to come on the air while they're waiting to hear it on their radio, and you're not going to hear it that way. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve in Fort Worth.
Okay, Steve.
I was going to ask Jerry, a couple of years ago they discovered a pyramid in Karal that some archaeologists presumed to predate even the Egyptian pyramids in Egypt, and I was wondering if there's any connection with the builders of the pyramid in Karal to the builders of the Star King at his location.
All right. And if you will, just listen off phone, listen off the computer.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about that, Jerry? Is there any connection between the builders of this Stargate and the builders of the pyramid at, I think he said, Karal?
Oh, that would be Karal.
Yeah.
K-A-R-A-L?
Yeah.
And probably so. You know, one of the things that we've gotten in touch with is just amazing. We've been trying to figure out who these people were and where the technology came from. We believe that there are two different paths of knowledge that intersected. One, maybe not of this earth, and the other, perhaps, is really, really ancient technology from a time before our current age, what we call the Third World. We've recently got in touch with some information that helps to clarify who the people were and what period of time that they lived. What we've found is that there were people who were coming here thousands of years ago that we now call the Phoenicians. But the Phoenicians were a group of people that were multicultural, like the Americans are. They brought all kinds of technology with them. We are pretty certain that the, for example, the emeralds that were used in Solomon's Temple came from Colombia, and we know for a fact that they found cocaine and coca leaves with mummies in Egypt. The only way that could have happened is if there had been some cross-cultural exchange. And now there's a fellow who has put all this together, and he's about to release a book on it. The name of it escapes me right now. But he has found empirical evidence that a lot of these ancient sites, for example, Karal, which is surrounded by pyramids, and these pyramids are much older than Egypt itself. They were built before Egypt was ever thought of, from what we've been able to find out from the archaeologists. And the way that this was done is because there was this cross-cultural communication.
All right, now the Phoenicians, of course, are world famous for being sea travelers.
Exactly.
And so maybe they just traveled a lot farther than we had imagined that they traveled. I've heard this from other people that there are artifacts that have been found in South America that are Phoenician, and therefore either the Phoenicians had to come to South America, or the South Americans had to go to Phoenicia. Somebody traveled the ocean in order for those artifacts to get there.
Well, and that's exactly true. And we already know where they crossed from the Atlantic to the Pacific. It was in Mexico. We know why they did it. It's because of the spondygus shells. That purple that's in the spondygus shell was used as a dye, and it was used by Egyptians. It was one of the more highly prized things in the world at the time. When Atahualpa met the Spaniards, he was told by his great-grandfather that when the bearded men returned, to welcome them and treat them right, because they were good people, because they were already trading with them. Atahualpa, the king of the Incas, had no idea that the Spaniards were as evil and cruel as they turned out to be. But yeah, we've got all kinds of cross-referencing on this cultural contamination of sorts.
Well, when he was told that men with the beards return, treat them good because they're good people, he was being told based on previous contacts, but it was not with the Spaniards, it was with the Phoenicians, right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
But who came back wearing beards were not Phoenicians, but Spaniards. And
and
they were conquistadors. They were explorers and plunderers.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's a reason why the Phoenicians stopped coming. And the reason has to do with the volcanic eruption that basically put a cloud of dust into the air, obscuring the stars. And the Phoenicians, they used the stars to sail by at nighttime, so they weren't able to sail.
All right, but now when that cloud of dust cleared away, couldn't they have resumed their travels?
Well, according to what we've been able to get our hands on, by the time the dust cleared away, it was about 5 or 6 years. And during that time, the Phoenicians weren't able to do any trading, and they lost a lot of their wealth. It was another group, I'm trying to think who the Phoenicians turned into. The Phoenicians were not a militaristic group at all. But this other group, and I can't think the name of it, Kathy thinks it begins with C. Carthaginians, perhaps, they were more militaristic. The Phoenicians lost a lot of their wealth, and they couldn't do any trading. They couldn't do what they had been doing for such a long, long time. So by the time the dust cleared, their group had gone more into a protective stance, and they became the Carthaginians, and the Carthaginians were now at odds with Rome.
Well, the Carthaginians certainly were tremendous military people. They fielded some outstanding armies and had some really legendary military leaders, whereas, as you say, the Phoenicians, they were business people. They were traders and not too militaristic. All right, now, let's talk about I asked you earlier about what's next, and you told me about this megalodon. But in terms of expeditions, in terms of exploring, you mentioned the caves. So let's go back to this, to the caves, to the tunnel system. Now, you've obviously been in there because we saw the video of you going into the cave, and or actually coming out of the cave and then going back into it. Did you shoot some video inside that cave while you were in there?
Yes, I did. We actually went back out there about 10 o'clock at night, in the middle of the night. We climbed the flip side of the mountain, and we went back these passageways back to the cave. It was a team of us. We went back into the cave with lights and with the camera, and a couple of our people went inside the smaller opening and passed on through, and that's how we know what else lies just beyond that inverted V shape. So we do have video of this, and it's really quite fascinating to see. You know, when you're inside a cave and you're using night vision to shoot, you don't see a whole lot. So we did take a few still photos. I have those. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I was a little worried about sending someone in there that time of night completely unprepared with any of the caving expedition equipment that we need. I didn't want them to go too far. I didn't feel it was safe.
Do you plan to go back in? You know, I was talking about what the future expeditions, what's coming up. Do you plan to go back into this cave and see if you can connect up with this massive tunnel system?
Well, I don't know if we're going to go into this particular one or not. I don't know if we will, if we can sneak back in there. The issue is that it's a highly restricted area, and getting into it, if they catch you, you could likely be arrested, and if you're arrested, then once your penalty has been delivered, you'll be exported and not let back in the country again. So I believe we got about as much as we're going to get for now, but conditions down here do change, and if it eases up a little, then yeah, we'll go back in and see how much further we can get.
Now, you, this cave where you shot the promo for my show, that's in a restricted area?
Yes, it is. That's why I didn't have any, you know, like a headlamp or anything with me, a flashlight. Because when I went up the other side of the mountain to circumvent the guards, you know, it's just awfully steep and awfully hard, and all I had that I was carrying with me was just a video camera. But what you saw is just a thumbnail sketch of all the material that I videotaped. There's quite an extensive network of rooms and passageways that are built in and around this cave because people who had exited were travelers and they needed a place to stay, a place that was safe. So they would go to their rooms, they could cook, there would be food there. It was a safe haven, and then when they rested and they were ready to take off again, they would go back in the cave, and instead of going in the door on the right, let's say, they would go in the door on the left and continue on their journey.
Wow, so it was kind of like an ancient Holiday Inn when they came out of the cave.
Yeah, pretty much. We've been told that this kind of environment exists one day's journey from one opening to another. And this is for the chastis, or the runners, who would carry goods from the ocean up to the mountains, for example, where they would stop and they would rest, or they would stop and they would hand off their goods to the next runner, and then the next runner would go in the cave and take off again. And all these fellows would have with them was just a torch, and they'd run through the caves until they got to the next place. The interesting thing about these...
Jerry, I hate to do it, man, we're into a break. So we're going to have to get the rest of that on the other side of this break, and we will do that. All right, folks, we'll be back more with Jerry Wills right after this and more of your calls. Don't go away. Listening to and perhaps watching The Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is Jerry Wills. Jerry, when we had to cut away for break, you were just about to make a comment about these runners. Now, you said they ran through these tunnels with a torch. And now I want to clarify something. These runners, their purpose was what? They were messengers?
Well, they were messengers or carrying fresh fish to the king, or fresh vegetables, that sort of thing. They're just a whole different variety of things they may be carrying from point A to point B.
And they use these tunnels to do that.
Sure, because the tunnels were a very fast route. To go overland, you have to go over the tops of mountains or through mountain passes or over a saddleback and then back down again and back up again. And the Andes are very, very steep and severe. These tunnels were a direct route from point A to point B, and they didn't have to climb over anything. They just took off running and ended up at the other end.
Okay, and it would seem logical then, since this was used to supply the king as well as a lot of other purposes, but used to supply the king with fresh food, it would seem logical that somewhere up on or around Machu Picchu, there ought to be an entrance to a tunnel.
Well, there is, actually. It's covered up. It's down at the Temple of the Moon, and there's another entrance that's nearby there that connects to the other tunnel system. The Temple of the Moon at Machu Picchu was a resting place, and there's a tunnel that goes from the Temple of the Moon all the way up to the grounds there at Machu Picchu, and then there's another tunnel near the Temple of the Moon that goes between Machu Picchu and Cuzco. And probably elsewhere. I don't know where else it could go, but these tunnels were, of course, quite extensive.
Since both the Aztec and the Inca exhibited great wealth, they possessed a tremendous amount of gold, and once the conquistadors began demanding the gold and began killing to get it, it seems that most of the vast wealth just vaporized. It just vanished. And the conquistadors were not able to find the source of that great wealth. Is it possible that there is maybe their national treasury vault underground in those tunnels somewhere?
Well, actually, it is underground, and no one's ever found it. When Atahualpa was being held captive, he kept being ordered by Pizarro to continuously fill up this one large room full of gold and another room full of silver. Towards the end, Atahualpa's wife had gone from where he was being held, which was at Cajamarca, and his wife went to get some more gold. She had 100 llamas, and make that 1,000 llamas, not 100, 1,000 llamas that were carrying gold and making their way back to Cajamarca. When news came to Atahualpa's wife that he had been killed, he had been beheaded in the public square, she took all the gold, went into the tunnel system, and sealed it. So the llamas and the gold were sealed into the tunnel system, and no one's ever found it since. But you can imagine, a llama can carry probably 50, 60 pounds of gold, and there were 1,000. So that would be 50 or 60,000 pounds of gold, and I'm sure there was some silver in there as well, that's just in a tunnel somewhere here in the Andes between Cuzco and Cajamarca, which is quite a distance, actually.
I'm doing a little math here. 50 times 1,000. So 50,000 pounds of gold at 16 ounces per pound. And I think we can figure that at about 800 per ounce. Wow.
Actually, $918 an ounce right now.
Oh, is it? Well, I figured it at 800, and that comes to $640 million. If I'm looking at that right.
Yeah. So
someone can, you know, I'm doing this sort of on the side over here. Someone needs to calculate that. $918 per ounce, and you take 50,000 pounds times 16 ounces times 918. Somebody do that and give me a call and tell me how much money that is. That's a lot of money. He had, and that's in addition to what he had already extracted from them, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He'd already filled this room up several times with gold and silver.
Now, was he continually shipping that back to Spain, or what was he doing with it?
They would melt it down into ingots, and they would have a pack train that went from Cajamarca and up through the Andes down to the ocean, and it would be loaded onto a ship. That wasn't as equitable a situation as they wanted, so they stopped doing that, and they used the pack train to go all the way to Panama. There are some legends that there was a huge several hundred burros or llamas, we're not sure which, that were moving through Ecuador, and they were attacked by Indians, by the natives, and killed off all the Spaniards, and they took all the gold and put it back in the mountain where they thought it belonged. So there's probably five times the amount of gold that you just calculated that's somewhere in Ecuador that is in one of these tunnel systems as well, and no one's ever found it.
The
so
tunnel,
that's just the tip of the iceberg for the things that are buried.
All right, now the tunnel systems go into how many different countries as we know those countries today? How many different countries do those tunnel systems travel to?
We've heard of the tunnel system being in Colombia, Ecuador, what happened? At least five countries, she says.
Mm-hmm.
Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina. And probably goes across into Paraguay and Uruguay. But we don't have any confirmed reports on the doorway there.
It seems odd to me that, I mean, you know about this tunnel system, and we've seen you in the video clip coming out of one of those tunnel entrances and going back into it, and here you are, someone from the United States of America, and you know about this. It seems odd to me to think that the governments down there don't know, and it seems odd that they would not have done some extensive exploration there. We're out of time. Jerry, thanks for being with us. Stay on the phone with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.